Shalom, everybody. Shalom. Rabbi Saul Solomon here, and I am with one of the great legends of humorous music, and also a near legend of non-humorous music, or something like that. We'll work it out. I have talking with me on this wonderful telephone in front of me, the one and only Peter Schickele. If that name rings a bell just the way it is, maybe because you have heard his classical musical pieces, or he has arranged albums for people like Joan Baez. Also, you may know that he is an archivist and a musicologist, and has discovered the works of the one and only P.D.Q. Bach. Yes, that P.D.Q. Bach. So before you shut your radios off, please give a listen to and join me in welcoming to the neighborhood Mr. Peter Schickele. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Very glad to have you here. Now, are you still in Hoople, or where are you these days?
Well, I run around. Now, I'm actually in upstate New York.
What are you doing in New York?
Well, actually, I live here. I live in Woodstock, New York.
Woodstock, my goodness. Were you at Woodstock all those years ago?
No, I wasn't. No. And actually, the Woodstock Festival took place about 50 miles from here, but even so, I wasn't there.
At that point, you were still in North Dakota, or just touring with P.D.Q. Bach's music, making sure that it was done correctly?
Yes, that's right. That was in 1969, and I started touring with P.D.Q. Bach in 1966, so I would have been touring in those days.
Well, let me explain again that you were sort of the archivist who dug up and found the manuscripts that were moldering, even though they were on perfectly good paper, but the actual notes were moldering as you were holding them. How did you discover that very first work?
The very first work I discovered while doing research in a castle in Bavaria, and the caretaker made me a cup of coffee, and the coffee tasted so terrible that I was curious about what he'd used as a filter to filter the beans through. And it turned out that the filter was a manuscript of a piece called the Sanka Cantata by P.D.Q. Bach. And I had certainly never heard of the Sanka Cantata, and I had never even heard of P.D.Q. Bach, nor had anybody else that I asked. So I took it back to the University of Southern North Dakota at Hoople and had it performed. And as soon as it was performed, I realized why the coffee had tasted so bad, but I was curious about this composer, and since then I've discovered about 100 works by this composer, each one another nail in the coffin of music.
Basically is, and yet somehow there is a joy in discovering, shall we say, outsider music and bad music. What was the most recent P.D.Q. Bach discovery that you unearthed from the sewers of world imagination?
What is the most recent? That's an interesting question, and I'm not sure that I'm going to. I haven't discovered any in the last few years. I'm in semi-retirement now, which means I'm still writing music, but I'm not touring. And so I would say, what is the most recent? I don't know. That's the truth. I remember.
That's fine. That's no problem. I mean, who knows? Maybe you have discovered. Do you think you have discovered all the music that P.D.Q. Bach wrote in his lifetime and in his death time?
Not necessarily. There may be some others out there. I'm not spending as much time in the year looking for them as I used to, but I may still trip across some.
Well, that would be wonderful if of course you do. And let me even backtrack even more so that we talk also about Peter Schickele, the serious composer and student of music. And let me see, you were, well, we know, of course, Southern North Dakota at Hoople, but your previous, shall we say, training, you were, of course, at Juilliard, but before then, you were actually in Fargo, North Dakota, were you not?
Fargo, North Dakota, that's right. That's where I spent my teenage years.
And was there was a music department there, and that's where you really cut your teeth, as it were?
Well, actually, that's where I was in high school in Fargo. So, the music department part doesn't really, there wasn't a music department, I was just in high school. But I did study composition privately with the City Orchestra, and I played bassoon and piano, and I had a real good time in Fargo, North Dakota.
Let me ask you a very fairly obvious question. Of all the instruments in the orchestra, why bassoon? You must have known you were a little odd even then. Bassoon?
No. This is something that is common to a lot of bassoonists. I started out playing clarinet because my mother had played clarinet in college, and she still had her old clarinet around. So I started out playing on that. And when I went to take clarinet lessons, the teacher heard me play for about a minute, and then he said, "Peter, you've got so many bad habits on this instrument, it would be easier for you to start a new instrument altogether."
Are you joking on that one, or is that really, really
no,
true?
No, that's what happened. And he suggested the bassoon. And later I realized he had an ulterior motive, because the community orchestra, which is quite good in Fargo, didn't have any bassoonists. So
big surprise there.
For a while, Fargo's only bassoonist.
Well, but let me ask you, you still have thrown me there for a moment of, like, bad habit on the clarinet. I mean, what would you do? Would you leave it in the freezer overnight? What is a bad habit on the clarinet?
Oh, well, I just thought... The embouchure, the way you put your lips on the instrument, I was doing so incorrectly that he felt that I would never get a good sound out of the instrument.
Wow, so you took up the bassoon and you never looked back, as it were. But at what point? I'm sorry.
I never looked back, and as I really enjoy. Not only do I like the bassoon; it's a wonderful instrument. But the great thing about playing bassoon is that everybody always needs one. There's always a shortage of bassoonists, whereas there's a plethora of clarinetists. So I got to play in all sorts of things that I wasn't really good enough to play in, just because they needed a bassoon so badly.
Well, right. That's what it is. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of careers like that. They're looking for... There's a big story in the newspaper about coal miners in Australia. They're making $200,000 a year. Why? They can't find people who want to go work in a coal mine. So there you go.
Okay.
I don't think that's remotely germane, but I just thought I would bring that up. So, when did you start composing music, Peter Schickele?
I was not a child prodigy. I wasn't interested in music particularly until I was about 12 or 13. But before that, I had gotten I'd fallen in love with Spike Jonze and his band.
Ah.
And for your younger listeners, I'll say that Spike Jonze had a comedy band in the middle of the 20th century doing takeoffs mostly on popular music of the day, but also on some of the very famous classics like Carmen and the Nutcracker Suite. He had just a wonderful band, and the best stuff is I still love it. And what happened was that I was always theatrically inclined. I was a sort of a born entertainer, you know, always getting up and trying to make the adults laugh, and during my teenage years, I got more and more interested in music for its own sake, and not just for the sake of comedy. But obviously, the comedy did not die out; it resurfaced with Beating You Bach.
So this actually surprises me. So you started with the comedy, and then gravitated, as it were, to the more serious stuff, and then backslid so sadly and tragically into the works of BDQ Bach. Oh, I did not. Now, I envisioned you being the kind of class clown who wasn't a nuisance. You were always, I'll bet you were the class clown who was showing off the wit and the cleverness, and the teachers actually liked you, even though you were making jokes. Am I right?
Well, I like to think so, yes.
This is good. So at what point also did you become an orchestrator?
Well,
an arranger?
When I was 13, I put together a little band in imitation of Spike Jonze. And this band, I use the word lightly, this band consisted of two clarinets, a violin, and tom-tom.
Okay.
Because that's what we had. And so I started writing music for that. And I was just even learning how to write notes on paper. I had studied piano a little bit before that, but not much. And so I was just figuring out how to write notes on paper and also how to write pieces for two clarinets and violin and tom-tom. And it just got more and more involved, and I started writing pieces for my high school friends. And by the time I went to Swarthmore College, by the time of my freshman year in Swarthmore, I knew that I wanted to be a composer, and that's what the focus of my life would be.
That's absolutely wonderful. And we are talking, by the way, with Peter Schickele, the one and only. And I have to say, there's an album. You did three albums with Joan Baez where you were arranging her music. And some of it is quite beautiful. There's a song called Saigon Bride that you arranged that is just so profoundly touching and moving, if I dare say so. But how did you get to know and hook up with Joan Baez?
Well, that was through the record label. The Vanguard Records got interested in Petey Kubok. And we ended up, I think, in the end, making about 10 albums or something on Vanguard. But Joan Baez was also on Vanguard. And somebody at Vanguard got the idea of doing a Christmas album where the carols were arranged with the feeling of the time that the carol came from. In other words, a carol like Lule, My Child, which is obviously a Renaissance piece, would be arranged for recorders and viols, but an 18th century carol like Joy to the World would be for instruments in use in the 18th century. And because of that historical aspect of it, they thought of me, because of my work with Petey Kubok. So I did the arrangements for that album called Noel, and it turned out nicely. And so then I did an album called Joan, which was contemporary material.
Right, yes.
And then a very unusual album called Baptism, which I actually wrote all the music for, or virtually all the music for.
So what was it like working with Joan Baez? Was she nice? Was she difficult? Did she hurt you? Was she sweet? What?
She was sweet. She was very nice. We had an unspoken agreement, which is that she didn't tell me how she wanted the songs arranged. She didn't tell me how to go about it at all, and I just did it on my own. And if, as happened a couple of times, if she didn't like the arrangement when it got played, we either didn't put it on the album, or in one case I redid. I did the arrangement over again, and then she liked it. So I found that much better than some other singers I worked with in that time when I was arranging. Tried to tell me how they wanted arranged, and I wished that they could do it themselves, because it just had the effect of inhibiting me. But with Joan, it was just wide open. It was very nice.
That is wonderful. May I ask, and not to say that they were negative experiences, but who were some of the other singers that you arranged and recorded?
Well, Buffy St. Marie was somebody I arranged for, and the other ones were not so well known. As a matter of fact, I can't remember their names now myself. They never went on to become
right
widely known.
You know, Buffy St. Marie is still performing. I didn't
realize. Yes, I know.
I think that's marvelous. Have you been in touch with either of these people? Do you stay in touch?
I cross paths with Joan every 5 years or something, and we say hello. But I haven't seen Buffy for years.
All right, just checking. I always wonder if people keep in touch, you know, when they've worked on a project and then they go their separate ways. Let me ask Peter Schickele also about your serious composing, that you did do a film soundtrack called Silent Running that came out. There was some Joan Baez music on that, too. How did you get into film composing, and why didn't you end up becoming a Randy Newman and doing more of that?
Well, I liked film composing a lot. I really liked the constraints of writing film music, having to be very precise about how long a cue was and everything. I found all that invigorating. My brother was a film editor and filmmaker himself, and this first movie that I did called Crazy Quilt, he was the sort of assistant everything on it. He helped the director and editing and shooting and everything. And because of that connection with my brother, he suggested that I write the music, and the director liked what he heard, and so I did the music for that movie. And then that director's second movie called Funny Man, I also did. And And then Silent Running came along. Silent Running was the first movie I had done for a real Hollywood studio. The first two were very independent. And then I did one more film after that that was, as far as I know, never released in the United States. I think it played in the UK. And then the problem became, when I started touring with PDQ Bach,
yes.
The thing about film scores is they always want you to start tomorrow, because basically what happens is, and there are variations, but basically what happens is they get the movie done and now they want the music. And so it's no accident that most film composers live out there in L.A. and you sort of have to be ready to at a moment's notice. Silent Running happened to come at a time when I could drop everything and go out there. I didn't have any other major commitments.
Right,
since
yeah.
then, I got to a point where I was doing almost 60 concerts a year, and it wasn't so easy to just drop it and go out there. So the only film I did after those first four was one of my favorite experiences. It was an animated film of Where the Wild Things Are, the Maurice Sendak book. And I could do that because it was only 8 minutes long.
Well, that helps, yeah.
Yeah, but as I say, I like doing films, but it got to be too difficult in terms of time.
I understand. And you said now that you are semi-retired and not doing the touring thing. Do you miss it, or did you do enough?
I think, as of now anyway, I did enough. I don't miss the touring much. I certainly don't miss the traveling, which got harder and harder to do. I do a little bit of performing around Woodstock here, but I just don't miss going out on the road particularly.
Now, speaking of the difficulty and things like that, I hope you don't mind my asking, how are you? Because you spent a good chunk of, like, last year fairly incapacitated, unless I'm mistaken. What happened? Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I had some pain that I had to be hospitalized for, and I had an operation for it, and the operation was successful, but then I got an infection in the hospital, and so I had to have more operations to take care of that. So last winter wasn't a great winter, but I'm very much on the mend now and doing fine.
Well, it's fun getting old, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it great? All sorts of new adventures.
Now, one of the reasons that not only I, but the host of this radio program, Dave Lefkowitz, admires you so much is not just from the music and not just from the PDQ Bach and everything else, but you were also a radio host for a few years doing a program called Schickele Mix, which was on a public radio affiliate. How did that come about, and why aren't you doing it anymore?
I wish I were. It came about because of the way I used to listen to records on my record player. Before I could afford to have anybody else copy my music, I had to copy my own music. And it's boring work. And so I would put LPs on my record player, you know. And I would put a Jerry Mulligan jazz record on, and then the Marceau Mass on, and then I would just completely mix up the records in terms of period and kind of ensemble. And I started to notice similarities among these different kinds of music that I hadn't thought about before. And that was really the genesis of Schickele Mix. And in the late 80s, I was beginning to get tired of touring PDQ Bach. I mean, not tired for good, but I wanted a break. So I'm a practical man. I timed things for when my youngest kid got out of college. And I quit touring for most of the 90s with PDQ Bach. I did a few performances of Peter Schickele music, but I didn't do any touring of PDQ Bach. And I did the annual concerts in New York, which had become a tradition by then. And during that time, I found a wonderful producer for Schickele Mix, and he worked out in the Twin Cities, and so I actually recorded Schickele Mix in St. Paul, Minnesota. I would go out there with a whole bunch of records, and they have a wonderful record library out there, And I would go out, we'd rent this studio for maybe a week at a time, and I'd go out and record a bunch of shows and do that several times a year. And it was wonderful because nobody was looking over our shoulder. We just put the show together, and that was it.
I remember listening to it on PRI, Public Radio International. I just
right,
remember that.
But then we were working on grants, NEA type grants and stuff like that, and they are designed to get smaller and wean you from them. And somewhat to my surprise, the PRI couldn't find corporate underwriting for the show, so we ran out of money.
Oh,
that's what happened.
Well, you did about 150. How many roughly? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think 167.
167 episodes. So let me ask the $667 question there, Peter Schickele. Where are these programs? Can people?
They aren't available now. I wish they were. The problem is that if you broadcast, particularly on public radio, if you broadcast music, you don't have to get clearances for it, for the copyrighted music or for the performances. The radio stations pay a blanket license for everything that ASCAP has and everything that BMI has, the two licensing organizations. But if you sell things, if you sell CDs of them, you have to get a clearance of every copyrighted piece.
And
even if it's Beethoven's Seventh, you have to get a clearance for the orchestra that's playing it. My understanding is that it's not that this costs necessarily so much money, but it takes a whole lot of time, particularly since I used a lot of pretty obscure records. And you, in some cases, have to find out whether the record company was still in existence. But I've never found anybody to underwrite this process of getting the clearances. And
would you need clearances just to have them perhaps on a website so that people could simply listen and enjoy, and if they want to pay a little fee to you to listen maybe or not or what? And you know, instead of selling actual CDs or downloads through Amazon, just like, boom, these are the archives on your website.
I don't know the answer to that question. I, by the way, am completely illiterate when it comes to computers. I can't even turn one on. I get away with that because my assistant is very good at it. But I don't know the answer to that.
It's just a thought. It's just a suggestion. Because I think, I don't know how much money you would make if you went to sell these. It's not like it's going to sell like the next Radiohead album. So maybe if people want to hear your show, they can go back and it's just on the site. And, the internet is still the Wild West. Not as wild as it used to be, but it's a moderately wild sort of Middle West now.
Yeah,
so
right,
who knows?
Right. A wildish West.
And speaking of the West, Peter Q. Bach has come up with such wonderful things as Iphigenia in Brooklyn and Oedipus Tex. Do you have a favorite or two of all the horrible works that Peter Q. Bach wrote during his tenure?
Well, as I say, I've discovered about 100 of them, so it's hard to pick a least bad one, a favorite. Oedipus Tex certainly is one of them. One of my favorites. And also one that I wish were performed more often is his only full-length opera, The Abduction of Figaro, which is another favorite. But
I have to tell you, our local library at the university here has a copy of that. It's got it on DVD.
Right.
It was on TV or something, and then they have it. It's very amusing. It's very fun. People should rent that. Or buy it, or if you can find a place to buy it, please,
yeah.
Peter needs your money.
It can be bought.
Everything available. Can be bought in this world. I can be bought, for God's sake.
Yeah, right.
So, let me also ask Peter Schickele, and this, I hope this is not as embarrassing for you as it is for me, but I notice in your bio on Wikipedia, where everything is true, that you were in the orchestra at certain points for the Broadway show O Calcutta! With the naked people and the nudism. Is this a fact?
That's a fact. Orchestra isn't quite the word. It was a four-piece rock type group in the pit, and three of us were the composer lyricists. O Calcutta was a review in the sense it was a bunch of skits, not a through composed kind of thing. And we sort of split those up, and each one did different ones, and some of them we collaborated on, and we actually played in the pit for a while. And to everybody's surprise, it turned out to be a hit.
I remember John Lennon contributed something to that. I'm not sure, maybe Jacques Brel. I mean, a bunch of people, as you said, contributed the skits. And I didn't realize you were also contributing music. And did you write any comedy for it, or just music, or what?
No, it was it wasn't any comedy in the music. There was some of the skits were comedic, you know, like I wrote a tune that sort of gets played on the radio in a skit, so and the tune itself is not comedic. So, but it was an absolute ball. I mean, it was a terrific experience, and when it became a hit, I could actually go into a restaurant and have an order of Chinese dumplings all to myself.
Wow. That is an exciting experience. That's when you know you have made it in New York, when you can have your own dumplings, let me tell you. Peter Schickele, do you have another couple of minutes with us, or do you have to run?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
That's fine.
We're talking with Peter Schickele on Dave's Gone By. I am Rabbi Saul Solomon, of course, and just so many wonderful questions for this brilliant composer and humorist. And let me ask also, I guess a barely serious musical question, but what is it about modern classical music, except maybe, perhaps, for Philip Glass, that does not somehow go broad, go wide with the general public? Why did everything stop in, like, 1940-something?
Yeah, there was a time there after the Second World War when what became called the post-Webern School became ascendant, and composers were purposefully avoiding any sense of beat and any sense of key, and that turned a lot of people off. I think now that's there's a tremendous variety of music around now, and some pieces are played. Some of John Adams' pieces, for instance, are played a lot and enjoyed. So he has a piece called "Fast Ride" and a "Short Ride" and a "Fast Machine." It's a beautiful piece, and I personally was I flirted with that post-Webern school, but I was never seduced.
Well, it's difficult stuff. It's hard to get the mainstream audience to like even regular classical music, Tchaikovsky or whatever have you, when they're busy listening to rap and hip hop. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but my gosh, if it doesn't sound like Chopin or Beethoven or Mozart, certainly you're going to get an even tinier and tinier audience. But how would you suggest that modern classical composers who aren't working in the post-Webern school, who are trying to be melodic and pretty and nice and, hummable, how do they break through and say, hey, you might like this music?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the first thing is to find somebody who will play it, and that's sometimes tricky. But you can't, the music has to be heard for it to go across. And as you say, Philip Glass, his opera Einstein on the Beach is they're just putting together a new tour of it now. It's when we travel internationally and in this country, and it's been revived several times. And his opera about Gandhi is about to be done at the Met, and so. An interesting thing with respect to what you were just saying, that Philip Glass made a conscious attempt years ago to get his records taken out of the classical bins in the record stores and into the popular bins, because most of the fans of his music were young people who didn't
ways. He's probably the best known, and in many ways the best, like, modern composer that we have. Well, with all due respect, Peter Schickele, of course, your modern music is wonderful. And you are debuting a new piece, aren't you, in the weeks ahead? Am I right about this?
I have a piano trio being premiered on December 4th, and it was commissioned by a group called the Ilaria Trio, and so I've put their name on the trio. I've subtitled it Ilaria, which is a nice name because it comes from A-L, meaning wing, and aria, meaning song. It's a pretty idea. So anyway, that is about to be premiered.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be at Weill Recital Hall on December 4th. For tickets, call 212-247-7800. That's 212-247-7800 to hear the Ilaria Piano Trio. My God, if I ever wrote a piano trio, it would just be about my digestion and my terrible prostate. It'd be the Diarrhea Trio, I'm afraid.
Right.
So sad, so tragic. You know, Peter Schickele was a judge recently at a classical comedy concert. What's new in classical music comedy, Peter Schickele?
Well, that was a lot of fun. They were WQXR and some other people put this together. And somewhat to my surprise, they got about 80 entries from all over the country and world, somewhat. There was one guy there from Germany, and they whittled it down to eight finalists, and had, at the Caroline's Comedy Club, had the finals there. And mm-hmm. I was one of the judges, along with Robert Klein and Deborah Voigt and an agent named Charles Hamlin. And the quality was quite good. You could see influences in some of them of people like Victor Borge and
Peter Kubach. And Peter Kubach, I assume.
Yeah, there were some Peter Kubach influences there, too. There was a guy who played not one, not two, not three, but four recorders simultaneously.
Wait a minute. Two in the mouth, two in the nose, is that how we're talking, or?
In the nose, right.
Okay, because there's only one more hole, you know, that's...
An extra one in the mouth somehow.
All right, yeah.
He held it with his knee. Then there was an amazing one of a guy who it was a combination of magic and comedy. He had somebody from the audience give him a deck of cards that had a rubber band around it so the order couldn't be changed, and he flipped through the deck of cards very quickly, within 15 seconds, and then he gave the deck to the woman and had her hold the cards up and read them off, and he named every card before she revealed it while he was playing a Bach fugue on the piano.
Oh, good Lord! Did he win? Who was the winner?
What's that?
Who was the winner?
He was the winner. I can't remember his name, but he was the winner.
Oh, Mazel Tov. That sounds like a very, very fun event. I hope they do that annually.
As a matter of fact, and now here I don't have it written down in front of me, but it is going to be on Channel 13, which is in the New York area, the PBS. But I can't. I don't have it written down in front of me. Anyway.
We'll look for it.
It was good.
Yeah, that sounds like absolutely so much fun. And it is so much fun to be talking to Peter Schickele. We're just about to wrap things up, but I have to also ask, are you in touch, and how is George Mester doing? That connected.
George Mester.
Yeah.
Mester's doing okay. I am in touch with him. I hope to have lunch with him in a couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. He's going to be in New York. And I'll catch up with his news then. I haven't talked to him for a while.
And I guess the other question is, we kind of know that, yes, although you're not touring, you are still, thank God, writing music, and you're doing little performances near where you live, and then a little bit of concerts and special events here and there. How do you see yourself now that, I guess, you're 76 years old? Do you go out gracefully? Do you keep writing music till the end? What do you intend for your golden years, Peter Schickele?
Well, I just try to have a good time. I, like girls, want to have a good time, and as long as I got music to write, I'm going to write it. And if my legs get a lot better and everything, I may even go back to performing. I don't know, but as of now, I'm just really enjoying writing.
Well, you don't have to go down the rope anymore. You know, it'd be all right if even they wheeled you in. You could do comedy from a chair. You know, you don't have to come down the rope and do the thing and running around. It's all right. You know, you can drink from the bottle and get drunk on the stage like you do. Not for real, of course, but that's not the Stone Guest. Which is the one where you're getting progressive?
Iphigenia in Brooklyn.
Oh, that is an Iphigenia in Brooklyn. Okay.
I play the wine bottle.
That's it. Have you invented any instruments in the past few years? Or has PDQ invented any new instruments?
No new ones in the last few years. Some of the instruments that PDQ Bach used, people in that classical music contest that Caroline's used too. So I was glad to see that they're going into general use.
That's wonderful. Last question for Peter Schickele. Actually, you have kids. Are any of them in music or in the showbiz?
I have two kids, and they're both involved in music. My daughter is a songwriter and plays bass in a couple of sort of indie rock groups. But she is her main thing is she organizes and runs a rock camp for girls, the Willie Mae Rock Camp. Girls 8 to 18 come for a week, and they get put in groups, and they write a song, and by Saturday night they perform the song. And it's a tremendous thing. And my son is a composer, both of classical music, as you might call it, and he also plays in a bluegrass band, in a sort of modern bluegrass band, and writes songs for that. So they're both involved with music.
Do you think it's nature nurture? Is it genetic that they have it in them through the genes, or it's just, you know, daddy has done this with great success and fun for all these years, so why not go into music?
Well, it may be some of both. I certainly bent over backwards to not push them into music. As a matter of fact, I realized that, after their high school was over, that I don't think I ever took them to a single concert. But there was so much music around the house that they grew up with music, you know, So it's probably some of both. I didn't think my daughter was going to be involved in music. She took piano lessons for a year, and then she lost interest and didn't want to have anything more to do with it. But then later she took up the bass guitar and the piano, and so you just never know what's going to happen.
Well, happily, it's all working out wonderfully, thank God, and you're feeling better. And please, Peter Schickele, make more music. Find some, get your assistant, and find that assistant to have another assistant who can work on getting the radio program Schickele Mix back out there, because I think people should hear it. Also, everybody, go to Wild Recital Hall on December 4th and hear the Alaria Piano Trio. Now, a world premiere from Peter Schickele. And all I have to say is thank you so much for your great, fine music, and even for the really horrible, rotten music that you unearthed. All of it. Thank you.
It's been a great pleasure, Rabbi. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Peter Schickele.